the GP Plus Careers Podcast.
Are you a GP hoping to diversify your career? Perhaps you've got a passion for women's health or have ambitions to be an expedition GP. Or maybe you've just always wondered, what would it be like to be a GP working in a prison? Well, this will hopefully be the podcast for you. My name's Sophie Lumley. I'm a First Five GP in the West Midlands and also a training programme director. I certainly fell into the above category, and I was keen to start this podcast to find out about the breadth of career options available to me, my colleagues and my trainees. I've been lucky enough to interview fellow GPs who've had some of these extra roles. They've told me what their role involves, how they got there, and the tips and advice that they have for those hoping to follow in their footsteps. I really hope you enjoy listening and feel as inspired as I have in speaking to them. So I'm very pleased today to be joined by Alistair Robinson, who is a GP with a special interest in frailty. So over to you, Alistair. Could you tell us a little bit about what your role involves?
So my role involves looking after frail and elderly patients in the community. We see them in their own home, and we try to approach all of those aspects of care that are much harder to deal with in the traditional GP area. So we have a little bit more time, try and unpick a lot of chronic problems, a lot of advanced care planning. There's a lot of dementia, Parkinson's, and we try to keep people out of hospital, keep them at home, keep them happy, and try and address lots of chronic conditions.
Awesome. That sounds really interesting and also really important. You talked there about visiting people in their homes. Could you talk us through what your week sort of looks like? What activities are involved?
First thing on Monday morning, we have a team meeting. So I work within a wider team. I cover a one particular area. I work with a couple of specialist nurses, with a geriatrician, social services, older age, mental health. But we have a small team huddle on a Monday morning. We talk about our new patients. We talk about any existing patients, talk about any issues that we have, and then the week ahead. And then so after that meeting, I'll typically go off and see a new patient, and I do a holistic assessment on my patient. So I'm looking at the whole patient. I'm looking at everything around them, a full comprehensive geriatric assessment, or a comprehensive frailty assessment, as we prefer to call it. So that can take a little while. We talk through what we'd like to achieve with our involvement. And then I will write up my notes. I will then go and see another couple of existing patients as well in their home as well, go and visit them, see how things are getting on, chase up any outstanding things that need to be done, make some phone calls, discuss any issues amongst the team, speak to the EPNs and see if they need any help with anything. So a lot of home visits, a lot of phone calls, bit of admin, bit of driving around. That's what a typical day looks like.
I suppose in some areas, not all GPs will have access to a sort of specialist frailty service run by GPs like that. How does that interact with the GPs in the area? How do people get referred into you, and how does that side of things work?
Yeah. We take patients from a lot of different places. So first of all, the classic one is a GP. They either see or speak to a patient. They realise they're complicated, difficult, frail, elderly, got lots of things going on, and think straight away, right, let's refer into the frailty team. So GPs are one way. We also work closely with geriatricians in the local hospitals who can also speak to us. Social services occasionally refer to us, saying, you know, I think you might benefit from seeing this patient. The district nurses as well, they might pick up the phone and say, I'm a bit worried about this person. So, I mean, we get referrals from everywhere.
It sounds like it's all very well linked up in the area you're in. That's fantastic. So I'm really interested, and I'm sure others will be, to hear about how you got into it. Could you tell us a little bit about your career journey and how you became a GP with an interest in frailty?
I came to medicine quite late. I didn't go to medical school until I was 34. So that was a struggle, just getting through, keeping up with lots of super bright young people. But I got through, and then I trained, I did GP training in West London. And then I stayed on in my training practice for a little while. Which I enjoyed a lot, but then I heard via a friend of mine who was doing this job that they were looking for people to do some frailty. So I talked to her a little bit more about the job, then I went up and met the team, and I thought, this sounds fascinating. I get to be a real doctor here, a real, you know, hands-on, get really involved, spend a little bit more time with the patient, and I thought, this sounds fascinating. So I started off doing, I think, 3 days a week, and then GP outside of that as well. And things just took off from there. So word of mouth, essentially.
And were there any specific requirements that you had to have to sort of develop that role, any skills or qualifications?
I certainly think there is a diploma in geriatric medicine, which I didn't have at the time, but I have now, and the team that I work for actually encouraged me to do it. That's certainly helpful, but it's not essential. I think really the key with frailty is you don't carry any separate medical skills that other doctors don't have. It's just you maybe have a little bit more opportunity to apply what you do know.
And were there any other sorts of experiences in frailty you'd had before, or anything that you think would be helpful for others going forward?
I think it's just it's what sort of doctor you want to be yourself, and finding that area where you can be that doctor you want to be. I think that's the thing that that appealed to me most about this job, but. I think, you know, it's within every GP to go off and do these things. It's all the things that you've learned come into play here. All the communication, very, you know, all the things that us as GPs really excel at with our communication and working with other teams and being the kind of the hub for the care of the patient. It's almost you feel how a GP might have been 30 years ago when they got to, you know, on their way home, just stop in at houses. So it's perhaps a little bit like that. So there's nothing particularly special that you need. Yes, there are things that might help, but certainly nothing in particular that you need to go out and get to do it.
Oh, fantastic. I think a lot of people think about funding and pay when we're thinking about extra roles. So could you tell us a little about whether you had any funding or specific pay in order to develop those skills, and how the service gets funded in case it's something that people don't have in their local area?
I'm paid on a sessional rate, so I just in the same way that you would if you were working as a GP. So the number of sessions, straight sessional rate for that. The service itself is funded by the local CCG or ICS. Each area has a specific budget for frailty, and GPs need to fulfil their frailty kind of obligations. So in our area, the GPs realised that if we had one particular team who were spearheading the frailty, then this would take a lot of pressure off them. They've put some of the frailty budget towards one side. So the team that I work for get paid from that pot. And then GPs have a different frailty area. So I mean, funding is probably not my expert area, but I know it trickles down through the commissioners. They commission the frailty team, and we get paid out of that, essentially.
Can you tell us a bit about what you find the benefits are of this role for yourself?
I went into medicine because I love to learn and continue learning, and in this role I am forever learning. There is every day is a lesson, and I learn so much, and you learn from your team, you learn from your patients. The learning opportunities just never end, and that is the biggest attraction for me is just constantly learning more and more. So that's the main thing. You spending that little bit longer with the patients, getting to know them, their carers, their families, means a great deal. And the trust and the rapport that you develop with them is very special. And you really feel, although our caseload is obviously smaller, you feel that you really get to know them, you really get to help, you really do get to make a difference in a very meaningful way. So I think those are the two main areas that really excite me about this role.
Do you think there are any downsides, or do you find any downsides with the role?
Well, I'm in my car a lot because my patients are at home, and that's where I'm trying to keep them. I'm passionate about keeping them out of hospital, out of A&E. Some bounce back a lot before I get there, and we try and unpick these vicious cycles. So there's a lot of driving. I'm driving around from patient to patient house, and so that's perhaps one thing. But I can live with that.
And do you have any advice that you would give to people hoping to develop an interest in frailty as a GP?
There are so many opportunities while you're training to get a handle on frailty. If you're in A&E, there are now more in-house frailty teams in hospitals who you can get involved with. Learning the basics of a comprehensive geriatric assessment, learning what frailty is and what it looks like. And I think learning to have the confidence that sometimes less is more, particularly in frailty. Less medications, less consultations, less clinics, all of that can actually, learning to get the confidence to say, actually, maybe we shouldn't be doing these things. Through your training, you will find these opportunities when you still have that little bit more time to do things because you're a trainee. Seek out any hospital frailty teams. Seek out, while you're in your GP practice, there will be a frailty lead. Speak to them, see if you can get involved with them, see if you can go out, do some home visits, do some basic frailty or comprehensive geriatric assessments, and get involved. You need to be tenacious, but then you need to be tenacious in life. So this is an area that is going to be growing almost exponentially. So I wholeheartedly recommend that you seek out some opportunities to learn about it more.
Great. I think that's really helpful to say, start thinking about it early and look at what's being done already in your area and linking with the frailty teams. Are there any other sort of networks of frailty doctors or frailty teams that it's worth people being aware of, or conferences, things like that you could signpost people to?
There's the British Geriatric Association. I think they're a good place to start. I think your local commissioners, you can always get a hold of them and just say, look, what are your local frailty services? Who delivers them? Is there anyone leading that up that I could contact? So I would think I would maybe start in a broader sense, looking at the nationwide associations, but then look locally and see who's doing what and get involved. You'll be amazed what happens if you contact people and say, I'd like to get involved, how interested people are to get you on board.
Great. And I think it's certainly palpable the passion and enthusiasm that you have for this role. So hopefully others will feel inspired as well. With all of these podcasts, we're hoping to end on a real positive note. And I'd be really grateful if you could share either your best moment from this role or highlight of having this role to finish off.
It's difficult to say that they're best moments, but I think when you feel that you've really made a difference. There's a fair amount of end of life in our service. And I think when you have prevented unnecessary admissions and perhaps managed to avoid bad outcomes, really when you speak to relatives of a patient who's maybe passed away at home peacefully in their own bed with their family around them, you think to yourself, I think I really made a difference with all of that. When I came along there, there was a big danger they might pass away in hospital. Looking back, there are probably those moments where I feel that I've made the most difference. Not necessarily complicated things, not reinventing the wheel with medicine, but you're doing a lot of basics. And like I said earlier, sometimes less is more, but sometimes doing less requires a lot more explanations. So I think when things go right, it's extremely satisfying in terms of managing complexity.
Great, and that seems like a fantastic note to end on, sort of less is more and patient priorities. So thank you so much today for talking to me, Alistair. And as we've said with other podcasts, the links to anything that Alistair's mentioned will be below in the attachment. So thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We hope that this careers podcast has motivated and inspired you to explore the variety of career options available as a GP. Speak to your appraiser, your local training programme directors, or perhaps join our RCGP mentoring programme for further support to diversify your career. Thanks for listening, and good luck.